clicks,
you can listen live or catch up
with BBC programmes from the last 7 days, all at your fingertips.
With the new Radio Player, you can listen online to all the BBC radio you love. Go to the BBC Radio 3 website and click on Listen.
And now, Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
Sir Trevor MacDonald was for many years the much-loved anchor of ITN's News at 10. Prior to joining ITN in 1973, Trevor, who was born in Trinidad, worked for the BBC World Service. He's reported from all over the world, as his book, Fortunate Circumstances, which was published in 1993, vividly recounts. Actually, Trevor, Fortunate Circumstances is a quote, isn't it?
It is. I think it was from Arthur Ashe who said when he looked back on his life, so much of it could be attributed to fortunate circumstances. And I'm afraid that rather gelled with me because I've felt exactly the same way. We all know that in whatever pursuit you turn your mind to, hard work, diligence, and all those things are important. But you need great slices of good luck.
But it was fortunate also for many of the people that followed you, and, for example, with Arthur Ashe, who was a great tennis player, and opened up possibility for a lot of other people, I think. And this is true in broadcasting as well.
When I went into it, I must confess I did so terribly kind of introspectively, really. I mean, I was looking for a career in journalism, and I had an eye to paying the mortgage. So it was kind of fairly self-centered in that sort of way. But it's rather nice to hear that what you do has some effect on others and that it might have opened the way. I love getting the kind of letters which suggest that, you know, somebody would say, my son never thought of being a broadcaster, but he saw you and thought, well, it's possible. And that's rather nice.
I mentioned Trinidad just now, and actually, strangely enough, perhaps the most quintessentially British piece you heard there.
Yes, Sir John Barbirolli came with the Halle Orchestra to Port of Spain. There was a sort of curious thing that went on in that Trinidad was too poor an island ever to invite the Halle. But if it was on a sort of South American tour, and if that South American tour included Venezuela, Caracas, for example, then it was only a short stop of about an hour to Trinidad. So the Trinidad authorities would pay that leg of the journey. And so because of that, we were able to have quite a number of famous people and famous orchestras. And of course, I'd known about the Halle, I'd read about the Halle, and I knew about Sir John Barbirolli's reputation. And to have the Halle in Port of Spain, Trinidad, and to be able to go and hear them was just absolutely sensational for me.
Because you might expect to see a test match there.
Exactly.
But not necessarily the Halle. But of course, the other thing was that Barbirolli was such a wonderful exponent of Elgar.
He was, and I also was very fortunate in having met in my time in Trinidad an Englishman, a man called Malcolm Taylor, lovely man, who grew up in Worcester, and he was not exactly of the Elgar generation, but not very far from, and knew almost everything about the great Elgar and talked about it endlessly, and he talked about the old man's love of racing and so on. And so I was schooled in a lot about Elgar's life, and to have that combination of Barbirolli and Elgar was just wonderful.
Thank you. I love the way he leads up to that moment where you suddenly feel you're off to the races.
It's absolutely gorgeous, isn't it? I mean, really, really splendid. I always remember, too, that Barbirolli probably played a small part in my decision to try and further my career in broadcasting. I did an interview with him for Radio Trinidad before this concert. And, of course, I schooled myself about it beforehand. And we talked a lot about Elgar, which he loved talking about. And at the end of it, he said, "That was a very good interview. You asked all the right questions." So I thought maybe I would follow this path.
Well, it's very nice to think that but for him, we might not have had you. That was Halle Orchestra, conducted by Sir John Barbirolli, in the opening of the Introduction and Allegro, Opus 47, by Elgar. One of the fascinating things about music, Trevor MacDonald, is that it can be an extraordinary vehicle for expressing profound human conundrums and frustrations. And that's true to a certain extent in the next music, isn't it?
It is. The next music is about people's universal cry for liberation, for freedom. I had never listened very much to the words of this chorus before, but the other night I was watching a tribute to Placido Domingo, and this was one of the pieces played. And they superimposed the words at the bottom of the screen. And I was struck by just how powerful the words were and what they evoked about this universal desire to be free, to be able to express yourself and to have liberty. One sees that in all shapes and politically these days. But it happened at the time I was also reading about the Civil War in the middle of the 19th century in America and reading about that great clash between North and South. And it was about slavery, in fact. It was about whether this was a proper way to carry on business in a country which styled itself as a sort of empire of liberty. And here you were enslaving some 4 million people. This was not right. And so I find it terribly, terribly evocative of all this. And what we're seeing all around North Africa and parts of the Mediterranean today, I mean, one can, in a slightly sort of extended way, draw those same conclusions.
We might be going to hear the Prisoner's Chorus from Fidelio, you know, when they first see the light.
Indeed.
But in fact, the one you've chosen, of course, is from Nabucco, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And the words are so inspiring. "Fly, thought on wings of gold. Go settle upon the slopes and the hills where the sweet airs of our native soil smell soft and mild. Greet the banks of the River Jordan and Zion's tumbled towers. Oh, my country, so lovely and lost. Oh, remembrance, so dear, yet unhappy."
Thank you.
quite wonderful.
Of course, the words, as you say, are stirring, but when you're given a tune like that...
I know. You know, it's just wonderful. I mean, I'm moved every time I listen to it, and then to think of what the words convey makes it terribly compelling.
That was the Prisoner's Chorus from Nabucco, Act 3 by Verdi, the chorus and orchestra of La Scala Milan, conducted by Claudio Abbado. Well, words, actually, Trevor MacDonald, are very important in the next piece, too.
They are. I was terribly lucky in that I went to a secondary school which was endowed by Canadian missionaries. And there was always, although it was not very heavily dwelt on, there was always a sort of religious bias towards it. But the thing about it is that just before Easter, at what passed for assemblies, the headmaster would play bits of music, and Handel was one of the things that he played. And we all stood there in fairly brilliant sunshine listening to this, and it's always stuck with me. And I felt the words, whether you are religiously inclined or not, "I know my Redeemer liveth," expresses such a potent belief in faith. I think it transcends all religions or creeds and whether you believe or not. I think it is a wonderful expression of belief, and of course, Handel is wonderful.
Thank you.
Such a wonderful sound, isn't it? And simple melody in one way, but very pure. And the ability to combine words like that with music is probably just about as high art as you can probably get.
And don't you think also the ability in that one in particular to suggest humility in the melody?
Yes. I play this a lot, and I've often wondered endlessly how on earth he managed to do that so successfully. It's just brilliant.
I know that my Redeemer liveth from Messiah by Handel. Margaret Marshall was the soprano with the English Baroque soloists, conducted by John Elliot Gardner, and Alistair Ross played the organ. You're one of the few people that one is likely to meet, Trevor MacDonald, who has been, although you had a chase across the desert to do it, in the presence of Gaddafi and one or two other people like that, Saddam too. There is an argument that all power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And you may have thought that with quite a lot of politicians you met or not, but I won't put you in the difficult position of commentating on that. But I am interested in what you felt in the presence of those people who we now know, and nobody disputes this, inflicted terrible things on many people.
It was a very strange feeling because you wanted to get them to talk, so you, in a way, almost ingratiated yourself. I remember particularly in the case of Gaddafi, after his run around the desert and all this nonsense about trying to destroy a border customs post on the border with Tunisia, when he finally sat down to talk, I begged him to do the interview in English. We are not very good in this country about listening to people's foreign languages. And it's always tedious to do so, especially in broadcasting. And I begged him to do this, and he agreed. And his English wasn't very good. And I remember many months later, I met somebody who said to me, "I heard your interview with that Gaddafi. What a tricky customer he was. You could see him searching just for the right words to lie to you about." And I thought, my goodness me, he'd done himself a great disservice and in trying to be kind to me. But of course, one is always aware that you are in the presence of somebody who has a record of unbridled evil. And so it's always difficult. But there's always a sort of barrier. I remember I was not scared about Gaddafi, but I remember being terribly scared about people like Saddam Hussein. And I wondered whether he would take offense at anything I said and whether I would incur so much displeasure that he'd want to detain me at his pleasure. I've always had a fear of incarceration, especially in a foreign land. So you have that. At the same time, you think you have a job to do. And I suppose if you think enough about that, it overcomes the fear that you may have. But not all of it was very comfortable.
A lot of people like that have a kind of disarming way of dealing with people, don't they, which can almost charm sometimes, but perhaps not in that case.
Yes, I didn't see much charm, although he was very businesslike in Saddam Hussein, but Gaddafi certainly had a kind of charm, and you were interested in the fact that he was so odd, something very idiosyncratic about the whole thing, and so that injected almost a kind of humour into the situation. You thought this was ever so slightly mad, you know, going around the desert late at night, and then meeting us all in this gaudily decorated tent and having people around him on their stomachs with submachine guns in the undergrowth, you know, when in fact we posed absolutely no danger to his life or limb and so on. And you thought, gosh, this is another one about which I would really bore my friends in the pub next Monday when I get home, you know, and all those thoughts, I suppose, helped to ease the situation. But their idiosyncrasies were what you remembered. You thought, gosh, how very, very, very odd.
Strangely enough, idiosyncrasy, Trevor MacDonald, informs our next choice slightly, and it's the difference between a violinist who certainly broke the mould in certain ways and the difference between the conductor who is very straight and as you might expect.
I liked what music does in this way. I saw Tenstedt at the Festival Hall conducting the Beethoven violin, and the soloist was Nigel Kennedy. Or I think Kennedy, as he likes to be known occasionally. And the contrast was, so there was Tenstedt in his conducting suit and so on, with his bow tie. And there was Nigel standing with long sort of cowboy-type boots and with a sort of neck kerchief and looking almost as though he was deliberately trying to be outlandish to an enormous degree. And yet there was, one suspected, a kind of high mutual regard, almost as father and son. And of course the music they produced was quite magical.
We can't have, obviously, all of the concerto, but I suppose the cadenza from the first movement does reveal him in full flight, Nigel Kennedy.
It does.
Thank you.
That was Nigel Kennedy playing with the Symphony Orchestra of NDR, conducted by Klaus Tennstedt. And that was an excerpt from the first movement of the Beethoven Violin Concerto in D, Opus 61. The cadenza, which actually he says, it's very Nigel, you don't really need all this boring crap, but the cadenza I'm playing is by Fritz Kreisler.
He said that, didn't he? Yeah. Yes, that's very, very Nigel.
There's, I think, a simplicity, if you like, but also a kind of suggestion of open space and nationality in the next music.
It's very American. I have always loved America. I loved working in America. It's a very, sort of, in many ways, open society. There is a very strong belief in many Americans that the people who are governed have a right to know the terms under which they are governed, and they have a right to have a say in it. At times they say it a little too boisterously and too endlessly, and one gets slightly tired of it all. But democracy can be messy, but it's a very, very good example, America, of a democracy actually at work. I love the open spaces, and Copland's music does suggest some of that. And I love that whole idea of American exceptionalism. It's a little maddening at times, but there are things about the place which are exceptional, and I think if you are, you probably occasionally have a right to say so, and they do. So I've always loved it, and of course I love the music. What I love about Copland is the way he captures something of the essence of that. You can almost picture scenes that you know, or scenes that you've seen in films about American life. And so it's always appealed to me.
And he did, of course, take Shaker tunes and work them into the mix.
And so it's quintessentially, very earthily American.
Thank you.
Copland gave the simplicity of those Shaker tunes an orchestral grandeur, didn't he? And made it so accessible to us all. And when I listen to that music, I can picture the scenes, and you can see the people moving about, and you can actually see them going about their lives in a sort of rural, rustic setting. But there is that grandeur about it, which he manages to capture so well.
Well, that's a good analogy, because, of course, he wrote it originally as a ballet for Martha Graham.
Yeah.
So he had movement in mind, and one sort of feels that in the music. We heard there the Simple Gifts movement from the Copland Appalachian Spring, and the London Symphony Orchestra was conducted by the composer. And, of course, his Fanfare for the Common Man is almost a national anthem in America.
And I think that is marvellous. And I love the idea about a fanfare for the common man. It says something, too, about him and about America, which is that there is beauty in simple lives. And common men should occasionally have fanfares to them because they do a lot of the valuable work. And it's an ethic which I think appeals to most people and certainly does to me.
It doesn't surprise me, Trevor McDonald, that you, for somebody who actually loves the synthesis of powerful emotions and music and words and music, that you should be keen on Puccini's Tosca.
I am not a great opera expert. I love those operas with great tunes. Puccini is certainly a master of that. And there are times when you can lose yourself listening to this music, and Puccini does that for me.
You know what I think is fascinating, Trevor, about that act, but also even in that little microcosm of it, is the meeting of the sacred and the profane, if you like. I mean, there he is, he's painting a picture of the Virgin, or certainly another woman. And the sacristan is sort of slightly worried about the comings and goings of what is clearly a girlfriend, Tosca, in fact. And so his emotional thoughts are sort of interrupted by the sacristan. And then at the end, of course, as the chorus are singing the Te Deum, Scarpia is there planning terrible evil.
To combine all that in this, and with such beautiful sound, to begin your Sunday morning by listening to something like that is always entirely glorious and sets you up for the day.
We heard Recondita Armonia from Tosca Act 1 by Puccini. The tenor on that recording, Cavaradossi, was Giuseppe Camporra, and the sacristan was Fernando Corena, with the Orchestra dell'Accademia di Santa Cecilia, Roma, conducted by Alberto Errede. You have written, apart from the book I mentioned at the beginning, you've written about some of the great West Indian cricketers, haven't you? Viv Richards.
Cricket is a West Indian contagion, and there's no known antidote for this rather virulent virus, and it's in your blood. I mean, I was brought up on cricket and you follow it through your life. I never forget, I was once in, and I remember the year because there's just been a Cricket World Cup and it's been repeated. I was in Beirut in 1983 when India beat the West Indies at Lord's. And whenever I was abroad in dangerous places and there were the odd explosion, I would always call up my mother to assure her that I was safe. There'd been a big blowout in Beirut, and I was a little closer to it than I confessed to her. But I said, no, I was all right. I was miles away and so on. And she said, but how could the West Indies do that? And I said, sorry, what are you talking about? She said, well, they've lost to India. And I said, yes, but I'm afraid I'm in Beirut. I wasn't following the cricket today. And it's an indication of just how deeply ingrained in West Indian life this game was. So it was quite natural that I should have graduated to writing books about cricketers.
The final choice is not one we get that often, so I'm rather interested in your reasons for it.
I've always liked Chopin. There's a purity about some of the notes. I always liken some of his music to watching limpid, clear drops of water falling down from a pure mountain stream and hearing that sound. And the notes are sort of sharply defined for me in that way. And of course, if you have famous pianists like Arthur Rubinstein playing, then it's enhanced enormously.
Well, most people Chopin's do choose solo Chopin, but there's, well, we haven't often had the third movement of the Piano Concerto No. 1.
My father, who did some work on the side, he was a refinery engineer in the oil industry, but did some work on the side for expatriate people who were working in the oil fields in Trinidad. And he would always bring home any kind of records that they discarded, and they unwisely or wisely discarded one of these, and I've played it endlessly.
Thank you. all of the charm and naughtiness, I think, that is in Rubinstein's character comes across there, doesn't it?
Yes, he was rather mischievous, wasn't he? Yes.
I always loved one comment. Somebody said to him, now, Mr. Rubinstein, what do you make of reviews? And he said, don't read them, measure them.
Very good.
That was the third movement from the Piano Concerto No. 1 in E minor, Opus 11 by Chopin. Arthur Rubinstein playing the piano with the New Symphony Orchestra of London, conducted by Stanislav Skrovacheski, a recording made, you might like to know, in Walthamstow Town Hall.
Really?
That's where they all used to be done, yes, in those days.
Yes, yes.
Well, Trevor MacDonald, thank you so much for introducing us to these pieces of music that you listened to in between your journalistic assignments and still now, I hope, in your home.
Indeed, and it's always an enormous pleasure to start the day with some music, if one can, and not a ritual hearing of all the awful things going on around the world. Music still has that power to soothe whatever breasts they are around, however savage.
Sir Trevor MacDonald was talking to Michael Barclay. And next Sunday, there's an edition of Private Passions recorded at this year's Hay on Wye Literary Festival. Michael's guest will be the historian Amanda Foreman, author of the award-winning biography Georgiana, Duchess of Devonshire. Private Passions is a classic arts production for Radio 3, and today's edition was produced by Sarah Cropper.
Every Monday lunchtime, BBC Radio 3 heads to London's Wigmore Hall for live music on a smaller scale. The Radio 3 Lunchtime Concert brings you musicians both established and up-and-coming, singers, soloists and chamber groups, performing for an appreciative audience at the Wigmore and all over the UK. This week, pianist Angela Hewitt arrives for a sold-out performance of Chopin and Bach, including the elegant dance forms of his French suites. Radio 3 Lunchtime Concert, this Monday and every weekday lunchtime on BBC Radio 3 from 1 o'clock.
So only 24 hours to wait for Angela Hewitt. That's jolly good. BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's 1 o'clock and this is David Cornett with a summary of the news. Unconfirmed reports say 5 people were killed and a number of others injured when Israeli troops opened fire on dozens of pro-Palestinian protesters trying to cross from Syria into the Israeli-occupied part of the Golan Heights. The border between the two countries has been disputed since the war in 1967. In the past 3 weeks, Israel has reinforced its defences with trenches, razor wire and minefields. The government is planning to provide more protection for vulnerable adults living in residential care in England. The move follows the broadcast last week of a BBC Panorama programme which showed adults with learning disabilities being abused at a privately run hospital in Bristol. Councils will be asked to create new protection boards. A meeting is taking place between senior Yemeni politicians to decide what they should do in the absence of President Saleh. He's gone to Saudi Arabia for medical treatment after a missile attack at his palace, although he says he'll return in a few days. The Foreign Secretary, William Hague, has called on President Saleh to step down. The Pope has urged Christians to defend the institution of marriage. He told a congregation of 400,000 people at an open-air mass in Croatia that secularisation was leading to the disintegration of the family in Europe. The Health Protection Agency has advised people travelling to Germany to avoid eating raw tomatoes, cucumbers or leafy salads for the time being because of the outbreak of E. coli, which has killed at least 18 people. The agency says the source of the infection is confined to northern Germany. The Blue Cross charity says there's been a big increase in the numbers of people abandoning miniature breeds of dog. The charity thinks people mistakenly assume that small dogs are easier to look after than big breeds. And the weather, heavy outbreaks of heavy rain, thundery at times, will affect southern and western parts. The north and east will be drier and brighter. It'll be generally cool with top temperatures this afternoon, 17 degrees. That's the BBC News and weather at 1:02. And it's time now for today's early music show. Here's Lucy Skeeping with another highlight from the 2011 Lufthansa Festival of Baroque Music.
Welcome to the show and highlights from a concert given as part of the Lufthansa Festival of Baroque Music. From the Middle Ages, Bohemia, the land that covered what's now the Czech Republic, was much at the centre of things. Its capital, Prague, was a thriving cosmopolitan city that attracted many of the visiting rich Hanseatic merchants who would buy and sell goods in the grand courtyard behind the city's famous Tyne Church. Town and country prospered. But as time advanced, Prague began to lose its financial pull. During the crippling 30 Years' War, the crushing defeat of Bohemia by Catholic Spain at the Battle of White Mountain in 1620 radically altered the nature of the country. Jesuit missionaries full of evangelical zeal flooded into Bohemia, but a byproduct of this change was a remarkable development in musical education, and with this, the emergence of a host of very successful and talented Bohemian musicians. We're going to hear now from one of the Czech Republic's leading early music bands, Ensemble Inegal, led from the organ by their founder, Adam Viktora. They're going to be playing some of their native music from this Jesuit period, from Bohemia's 17th and 18th century chapels and courts. We'll be hearing from the Czech soprano, Gabriela Ibanova, who joins the group to perform a couple of cantatas, including a tasty setting of the Salve Regina by Jan Dismas Zelenka, who, in spite of being the most famous Bohemian composer of the 18th century, is still one of Baroque music's best-kept secrets. And to begin with, music by Johann Joseph Ignaz Brentner, who came from a small village southwest of Prague. In his time, he was described as very famous. His music was heard at the court in Dresden and even exported as far afield as South America, courtesy of the Jesuit missionaries. After his death, though, he seems to have almost entirely dropped off the radar until just a few years ago, when some of his works were rediscovered. So this is Brentner's three-movement concerto in G, featuring a prominent part for the flute. It has a strong outdoor feel to it, and the middle movement takes its inspiration from the songs of the night watchman.